Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this summer, a new restaurant will be opening up in River North. It's called GT Prime, and it'll be the steak equivalent of the famed GT Fish on Well Street. GT Prime will be the latest restaurant for Kevin Boehm and Rob Katz of the Boca Group. Boca has become a culinary empire in the last decade, bringing Chicago restaurants like Girl and the Goat, GT Fish, and its namesake, Boca. But it doesn't stop there. Far from it. Throw in Little Goat, Duck Duck Goat, Perennial, Balena, Swift & Sons, Cold Storage, Momotaro. The list goes on and on and on. How does Boehm and his partner Rob Katz do it? Open up all these restaurants and keep them successful? Kevin Boehm, welcome to the big table.
That's an excellent question. I don't even know start if right I have there. The answer to it or not. Empire kind of makes us sound evil, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you
evil
know.
Evil empire, a Boca restaurant group.
Well, let's talk about GT Prime. Why don't we start there? This is a restaurant that last year people were talking about, and the date has been pushed back and pushed back. I said summer for this, you know, just sort of giving it a generic take. But where are we with GT Prime?
It's been terribly pushed back. But, yeah, it should open sometime this summer. And the idea for this was, I mean, opening a steakhouse in this town is not exactly the most innovative thing in the entire universe. So we were sitting around a table 2 years ago, and we said, what can we do to kind of twist this a little bit and make it kind of more modern? So if you've been to GT Fish before, it's all shareable.
Great place, yeah.
Everything on the menu is shareable. So we said, how do you make a steak restaurant where everything's still shareable? So what we're doing is for all the steaks, it's going to be available in 4 ounces and 8 ounces. So if you want to try, you're with four people, you want to try 5 different cuts, you can pick 4 ounces of 5 different cuts. It'll all be pre-sliced in the center of the table, and you can share everything.
Do you run a risk with audiences, especially in the city of Chicago, which is a steak and potatoes town, where, I mean, you're going to be on Well Street, there's going to be a lot of tourists who are like, steakhouse, go! And then they're like, and it's a different concept than, say, some of the other steakhouses that are in the vicinity?
I run the risk of them wanting thing and getting something
else. Yeah,
right. You know what? I don't think we ever think of it that way. I think we're always thinking when we open up a place, where can we be innovative at? And once we have them in the doors, as long as the food's good and the hospitality's there and it's great design, who cares? They're still going to like it.
That's right.
You know.
Let's talk about Chef Giuseppe Tintori.
Yes.
This is another restaurant from him. Obviously with GT Fish. You know what I love about Boca and you guys seem to do it. It's a very unique relationship you have with your chefs. You really let them run with concepts. You guys obviously are the ones behind it, but you let Giuseppe kind of run with it.
Well, I think the way that it starts is we buy into someone's talent. And these relationships start in a million different ways. I don't think that most people get that. A lot of times we've had 1,000 conversations with chefs. 500 of them have gotten a second conversation. Of those 500, about 100 have cooked for us. And of those 100, we have 6 chef partners. So once we bought into that talent of that person, then it's sitting around and figuring out where we can put it. What concept and where can we stick it to where it's their sweet spot? And every way is different. I mean, when we partnered with Stephanie knew what she wanted to do with Girl and the Goat. With GT Fish, that was actually Rob and I's concept that we had gone to Giuseppe and said, what do you think about seafood? And he grew up in Italy. He didn't know what a lobster roll was. The first step with Giuseppe was to go around, go to Boston, go to New York, and go to some real seafood restaurants and get his brain wrapped kind of around what a traditional seafood restaurant was.
What drew you to a talent like Giuseppe? What was it about his style, his food, that you wanted to partner with?
So we did a tasting with him, and what was funny was I remember he just brought like a big bag of groceries, and I don't think he even thought about it that much. He kind of cooked from the hip with us, and it was unbelievable and so much better than these tastings where guys have spent 2 weeks thinking about what they were going to make. He could be innovative and just riffing. And so we loved it. We loved that he cooked light. We loved that he didn't cook with a lot of butter. He just approached everything from kind of a different perspective, even with traditional seafood. If you've ever had the clam chowder over there, most clam chowders are heavy and cloying, and his is kind of acidic and spicy and light. And we love the way he thinks about food.
Is that a prereq for if you're going to be a chef partner with Boca, how they approach the food? Not only that, but the thoughts and the philosophy that they bring to the food?
It's more about signature voice. Like, you know, you turn on the radio and you hear Axl Rose sing, you know it's Axl Rose. If you blindfolded us, Rob and I, and you set Pandel and Hellier and Stephanie Izard and Lee Wolin's food and Giuseppe Tintori and Paul Varon's food in front of us, we would know which one was which. So to us, it's about, does their food make a statement? how do they differentiate themselves? So that's what we think about. There's a lot of tastings where we've tasted people who have great food that we haven't ended up partnering with because it didn't fit.
Let's go back to the idea of GT Fish. GT Prime will be on Wells Street as well.
Yes.
In that area, and that's a very historic area when it comes to Chicago food. I mean, Crofton and Wells was there for a long time. Even if you get even more casual, with Geno's East was up the road. Planet Hollywood was at one point on that.
Are you going to include that?
Yeah.
As historic?
I don't know. It's iconic, maybe, in a sense. But talk about how important it is for location, especially when you're talking about downtown Chicago.
It's really important. I mean, if you look at our restaurants, we're basically, obviously we have a Lincoln Park presence, huge West Loop presence. And River North to us was always a little scary because there's one side of River North that's crazy. And the chef-driven, there's not a lot of chef-driven stuff on that side of River North. And then on this side of River North had gotten kind of quiet when we opened up GT Fish. But it's still right there. You know, it's still in a great place. We think that more restaurants should come to that area. You know, business breeds business for us. We like that little stretch of there because it's still good for dining. It's not filled with wall-to-wall bars. So we think it's ripe for more restaurants to come through there.
And plus, there's a Carson's, you know, right there.
There is.
In studio with me, Kevin Boehm. We're talking about restaurants, his restaurant, his evil restaurant empire, Boca.
It's not evil.
It's not evil.
It's not evil.
Just an empire.
Yeah.
We'll have more with Kevin here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Kevin Boehm. He's the co-founder of Boca Restaurants, his partner, Rob Katz. Boca includes, how many are there now? I mean, it's 20-plus restaurants?
No, close. I think that we're 14 places right now.
Okay.
I think Rob and I think I've had 20 in my lifetime. Rob's had 20 in his lifetime. We've had 14 or 15. We've had 15 together.
Well, the new restaurant, GT Prime, will be open this summer. Take us back. I mean, why did you get into restaurants? What was it about the calling of not necessarily being a chef, but being a restaurateur?
You know, I'm a really lucky guy because at age 10, I went to my parents and said I wanted to open up my own restaurant. And, you know, everybody else wanted to be – yeah, I also wanted to play for the Chicago Cubs. But, you know, I told my parents at 10 I wanted to open up my own restaurant, but I didn't know anybody in the industry. My mom worked at Montgomery Ward. My dad was in the insurance business. And so I went to college like everybody else and thought I was going to go to law school. And after my junior year, I woke up one morning and said, you know, this is what I want to do. And I packed my Jeep up and I drove to Florida and I developed a plan, which is kind of a dumb sounding plan now, which is I'm going to bartend the afternoon. I'm going to wait tables at night. I'm going to live off of one job. I'm going to save everything I make off the other. And someday, eventually, I'll have enough money to open up a restaurant. That's kind of basically what I did.
What were the ideas of an early Kevin Boehm restaurant? What was it that you brought to your parents at 10? You're like, I want to do a Cubs-inspired steakhouse. What was it?
I had no concepts. I had no concepts at that point.
Such a naive 10-year-old.
So naive. I don't think I even had any concepts when I went to Florida. I just knew I wanted to do it. So I wanted to go work in some restaurants.
Why? What was it? What was the appeal? When you're in Florida, what was the appeal about owning a restaurant?
I think I liked the show business to it. I didn't get to go to very many fancy restaurants. I was not a rich kid growing up. So I only got to go to a couple fancy restaurants when I was growing up. I just was intrigued by fine food and fine beverage and service and getting dressed up to go to dinner. All those things just excited me. I thought it was cool.
Well, let's fast forward a couple of years and talk about your first foray into restaurants in Chicago. Talk about how you got involved. When you got here to town, what was it that drew you into the business?
Yeah, so I ended up opening two restaurants in Florida and then one in Nashville, Tennessee, and one in Springfield, Illinois, and I had sold them. And Rob Katz was a friend of a friend, and Rob had four very successful bars and nightclubs here in Chicago. And some friends put us together, said, hey, why don't you two have a cup of coffee and talk about it? And so at the first, it was like, what's the worst that could happen? We liked each other instantly. 15-minute coffee turned into a 4-hour cup of coffee. And we just said, what's the worst that could happen? A couple of knuckleheads, let's open up a restaurant together. And originally, Boca was the first concept. We hadn't even thought about the architecture of a company yet. All we thought of was
a restaurant.
Let's open up a restaurant. And in Lincoln Park at the time, you know, there was some really high-end fine dining. There was Charlie Trotter's and there was Ombria.
Right.
But there wasn't like kind of this mid-level, $45 check average contemporary American restaurant. And that's originally
what we decided we wanted. On Halstead, you're talking, you know, you guys are right now, you're right next to Alinea, but you're right across the street from Steppenwolf.
Correct.
Talk about what was there at the time. I mean, I know that area to be the classic Chicago Italian restaurants, things like that, and that littered Halstead Street at
that
time.
And still, Gianni, which still exists, and Vinci right across the street, and Black Duck was across the way. And we saw every single night that these restaurants would fill up with these theater goers. And we said, God, what if we did something that was really destination based and we really nailed it and we get all these theater goers and then we also fill up this middle turn? Maybe we could really hit something. And it worked. It worked. We were unknowns at the time. Giuseppe Scarato, who was the original chef who ended up opening up Serious Table here in Chicago, nobody knew who he was either. So we were just some unknowns trying to put out good food and be really nice to people.
What were some of the challenges for you? I mean, being an unknown and being in a part of Lincoln Park that didn't have the kind of food that you guys were shilling out at the time. Well, what were the challenges?
Nobody wrote about us. We had one article written about us when we first opened, and it was because we had a cell phone booth. We had this idea that we're going to put a telephone booth in there. It's so rude to talk on your cell phone at the table. Let's give people like this little cool soundproof booth. And we had it right when you walked in. And Dish in Chicago Magazine wrote a little piece about us, like one line. That's all we got. Tribune didn't review us. Sun Times didn't review us right away. And then one day, Chicago Magazine reviewed us. And that was a big deal because nobody knew who we were until that moment. And we kind of cashed in on that a bit.
Obviously, a lot of your experiences have been right place, right time, because what's happened in Chicago in the last decade, if not longer now, has just been an explosion of the culinary industry. So, you know, the idea of opening a restaurant in the early 90s, you may not have had an opportunity, the opportunities that are afforded now. Talk about when you realize you got something with Boca. I'm intrigued. I'm curious to when it became apparent to you that you needed to do more.
Yeah, it's a good question. We opened up Boca and it went well. And I think anybody can open up one restaurant and two restaurants might still be a coincidence. Three restaurants is a bona fide group. So we opened up Landmark. To be honest, we stubbed our toe a bit because we opened up this restaurant that was 10 doors down from Boca.
Right.
Doing similar food and had way too much of a bar scene. Rob and I actually walked down to Landmark one night on a Saturday night and there was a line of 200 people out waiting to get into Landmark, and we said, we're in huge trouble.
Why? What?
Because the restaurant will never kill the bar, but the bar will kill the restaurant. And so we said, this is going to be a problem.
And that's sort of a known thing in restaurants, that a bar will kill because too many people just want to drink, they don't want to eat?
Well, eventually, it depends on the space that you have. If the bar's eight deep, eventually they're going to crowd into your customers.
And nobody's going to want to sit down.
Your identity's going to get blurred. Because what are they? And that was the problem with Landmark always. What are they? Are they a bar? Are they a restaurant? What's the deal? And people were confused. And so it still was an economic success at that point. So we went on and we opened up Perennial, which was also kind of a contemporary American restaurant. Ryan Poley was the original chef there. And then we sat down and said, okay, who are we? And we decided that we were going to be this company that weren't going to build our company around one chef, a la John George or Mary Batali. We were going to build our restaurant group around a stable of chefs. We were going to look for talents and build an ensemble. But we also really needed to tighten up our concepts. We were opening up restaurants that were too similar. And if you look at our restaurants today, they're have the Michelin-starred contemporary American restaurant. We have the Italian restaurant, a Chinese, a Japanese. So we sat back and said, okay, first of all, it's not just about food. And it's not just about hospitality, but it's also about design. So we got really into design. And then we started like really looking for who this stable of chefs was going to be. And we moved from Giuseppe Scarato into Giuseppe Tintori. That was kind of step one. And when Giuseppe won Food & Wine's Best New Chefs in 2008, I think we got some more trust with the community. They're like, wait
they're
a
seeing
second.
You have
from,
hits.
You know
right,
what?
Right.
Those guys open up nice little restaurants, you know?
Right.
That's cute.
To now you're a player.
Wait a second.
Right.
Maybe we're a little bit more of a player. And so that's about the time when Giuseppe won in 08, we started to think, okay, maybe we have something here. And so in 10 is when we opened up Girl and the Goat. And Girl and the Goat, as explosive as it was success right from out of the gates.
Now, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
But we talked about how you were introduced to Giuseppe Tintori and the idea that he just came in and did stuff. Stephanie Izard was a full-fledged Food Network star. Bravo. You know, she did the whole thing. Are you chasing her? Is she chasing you? How does it work when you're going after somebody that is sought after?
I'll tell you the exact story. So we actually ran into her. So I had been to Scylla before. I think me, Rob, and her had met once.
And great place in Bucktown, right? That was right. Yeah Damon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so she was having dinner at Boca while she was filming Top Chef with a friend that we knew. And so we went by the table and touched the table. Hey, how are you doing? You know, we knew she was on Top Chef, you know, because it had been on the internet. And we were like, how's it going? And she couldn't tell us, obviously. She's like, well, yeah. it's going great, you know. But she looked happy. She looked like it might have been going well. So we just said, hey, after dinner, why don't you walk down to Landmark and let's, you know, we'll talk or have a drink. And we just got into a great conversation, and we just said, "Hey, when you're done with the show, why don't you ring us up?" And literally the day after she won, she sent us a text and said, "Hey, you want to have a cup of coffee?" And we went and had a cup of coffee with her, and the rest is history.
Kevin Boehm is my guest tonight. He's the co-founder, along with Rob Katz, of Boca Group, Boca Restaurant Group, several restaurants, 14 restaurants, everything from Grill and the Goat, as we mentioned, GT Fish, and the new restaurant, GT Prime, which will be opening this summer. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Kevin. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Kevin Boehm. He's the co-founder of Boca Group, a restaurant group that has been wildly successful in the last 10, 15 years here in Chicago. Girl and the Goat, GT Fish are opening up a new restaurant, GT Prime, this summer.
Duck Duck Goat. I
only do it for time. I only do it to be succinct. I could name every one of these restaurants.
We have a good little Asian sector now, too. Momotaro doing Japanese and Duck Duck Goat doing Chinese.
Let's get into the psyche of opening a restaurant. I mean, what goes into it from your vantage point? Obviously, we've heard a lot about the chef getting ready and getting the kitchen ready and the food. But from a restaurateur, what has to go into opening a new restaurant like Duck Duck Goat or GT Prime?
I'll use Momotaro as an example. So Rob and I's favorite cuisine is Japanese food. So the very first conversation we ever had about a restaurant included talking about a Japanese restaurant. And all these years, we just never found the chef. So one day, we just said, okay, enough. We're going to find the chef one way or another, whether it's out of town, whether we find him in Tokyo. I don't care. Let's find him. So the first step is A, finding a chef, and B, finding real estate, which is something that we do. We don't usually hire somebody. We usually go out and, you know, we own some of our real estate. We lease some of our real estate. So about the same time, we found a great building, which is where Momotaro is on Lake Street. And then we were doing it. We did a tasting with this chef from New York, who at the time was the corporate executive chef for all of Stephen Starr's 38 restaurants, which includes a lot of great Asian restaurants, Morimoto and Budokan. We were doing a tasting with him. We found a sushi chef in Tokyo at the Mandarin Oriental, who we flew to L.A. and met at an apartment in downtown Los Angeles and did a tasting for 6 hours on the floor of an apartment in downtown Los Angeles. And then Rob and I sat down and said, who do we want to design this place? And Avroco in New York was our design crush. They're maybe the most famous restaurant designer in the world. They do a finite amount of projects every single year, and you can't call them and hire them. You have to go pitch them. So we said, well, let's go and try to pitch these guys. And we'd pitched them once before, and they had agreed to do something for us, but they sent us how much it was going to cost, and we choked on it. And we're like, okay, we have a little bit more money now. Maybe we can afford them. So we flew them in. They looked at the building that we thought. We go, tell us if we're crazy. We like this building. It's underneath the tracks. Usually we don't love Lake Street. He walked in and said, this is the building. And so we engaged them. We did the two tastings that we both loved, and then we knew we were off to the races.
This is all happening concurrently. I mean, it is. I mean, obviously, if you're going to start a restaurant, you're having these meetings and you're going to L.A. and New York and coming back. And this is all happening at a pretty finite pace.
It is. So you got to do all this stuff together. So there's real estate, there's design, there's funding the restaurant, there's finding the chefs. You know, back in the day, we used to pass the hat. You know, we had a group of investors. We've always been pretty talented at making money within our restaurants. And so we had a very good investment group. And then a couple of years ago, we bought our investors out, and we self-finance these days. you know, that's part of it too. The passing the hat in the old days was not always easy.
Yeah, right.
And in 2008, 2009, when we were raising money for Girl and the Goat, the world had fallen apart. Nobody wanted to invest in anything, especially restaurants. So it wasn't always easy. Unfortunately, we had a good loyal group of investors. But yeah, so with Momotaro, we were funded. We had the talent. We had the design. We had the building. And then it's off to the races. And then it's looking at all these little categories. We have this critical path that we look at that includes everything from sitting down with a designer who does all of the outfits to figuring out what we're going to use for a check presenter. You know, we try to create layers within all the restaurants. So if you think about layers of food, making the menus interesting, changing them all the time, layers of hospitality. At Swift & Sons, we have a concierge in the space that's just there just to provide hospitality every night, to do something interesting. If it's somebody's 50th wedding anniversary, you know, calling up the husband and saying, tell us five interesting things about the wife, and then changing the dessert menu to be all things that are about her and the titles of the names of the desserts, whatever. And then in design, doing little things that people notice the 10th time they come in there, something they've never noticed before. At Momotaro, if you go downstairs and you answer the phone in the izakaya in the basement, there's someone on the other line talking in Japanese. But sometimes it takes somebody 10 times to notice that.
Well, I mean,
and it keeps it interesting.
I think that that's, I'd love to stay there. The idea of creating an experience as opposed to just a restaurant where you're just eating food. I mean, talk about the evolution of that, the maturing when it comes to that. I mean, when you started with Boca and even talk about Landmark, have you matured as a restaurateur? Have you said, okay, these are the things that you need to do now? I mean, are you pressing yourself to new challenges as you get older?
Oh God, there's been so much maturity for Rob and I. I can't even tell you. Yeah, and listen, you look at all these things as having a competitive edge, and you learn a lot of things along the way. I mean, Rob and I went to Lev Madison Park in 2010 in New York. And I'd made the reservation on Open Table, and I barely had one foot in the door. And they were like, Mr. Bame, so good to see you tonight. Oh, my gosh, and you brought Mr. Katz with you right this way. And we got to the table, and there was a handwritten letter congratulating us on our beard nomination in the center of the table. And they took us to the back and had a course set up for us in the kitchen. And at the end of the meal, I said to the maitre d', I said, let me ask you a question. I go, you pronounce my name correctly. Nobody does that. I said, did you just know? And she goes, no, I actually was stumped on that, so I called Boca Restaurant 30 minutes before you got here to get a correct pronunciation. And I was like, gosh, that's good. So I left there with this kind of renewed sense of we need to be, you know, like these little CIA operatives trying to think of interesting ways to provide people with hospitality before they get there. And it could be as simple as Table 43 is from St. Paul, Minnesota. And guess what? Darcy, our server, is also from St. Paul, Minnesota. Let's put them together because they might find some sort of, you know, commonality while they're at the table. It's going to make them feel more at home.
I find this fascinating as a diner and someone who goes out. I mean, and I'm sure people at WGN Radio, you know, you always wonder about whether or not restaurants are doing that kind of recon to get you ready for your experience, because sometimes you're like, well, hey, how do they do this? But you are. And that is something that is taking service and the experience to the next level.
Restaurants get boring when you go in every single night and you do the exact same thing. So what we kind of preach to the people that work for us and for our managers is like, we want you to keep it exciting for yourself. So figure out ways to make it interesting on a nightly basis that is going to make you happy and is going to make guests happy. Because, you know, all this energy kind of trickles down.
For years, we've heard about restaurants they're risky ventures. I mean,
yes.
There's the old adage that a successful restaurant has to last 5 years and not a lot of them do. How do you do that when you have an empire, when you have 14 different restaurants? What are some of the things that you have to look at to decide whether or not a restaurant is working or not working and either invest or double down or move on?
So if it's a 90% failure rate, and failure being defined as not making your fifth birthday, but the 10% that succeed control the market. So who are these 10% that control the market? They're the people that treat it like a business and they treat it with respect. The restaurant numbers get skewed a lot because everybody thinks they can open up a restaurant. So there's a lot of people that get into the business that don't maybe have any business being in the business. You know, Judy throws a good party, you know, so let's finance her and open up a restaurant with her, which it doesn't really work that way. For us, it's all about formulas, and you got to stay within that formula to be able to make money. You know, for us, you know, 34% labor, 26% cost of goods sold, 4 to 5% occupancy, 18% silo, which is a made up word for us, supplies, insurance, lease equipment, other, which is everything else. If we fall in that range, our restaurants are going to make, you know, 16 to 18% profit every single time. So we've gotten better at looking at all those categories. We don't keep anything proprietary.
Is there emotion that plays into it? I mean, you're emotional guys. Like, are there some where you're like, oh, we can't close this restaurant that meant so much to us and it's not in the parameters of the formulas we set up? Or do you have to put emotions aside and stick to the formula?
No, the emotions stay there. There was a time when Boca had probably, you know, slipped from its peak, which a lot of restaurants do as they get older. But that was never a consideration. It was like, this is our first and it means a lot to us and it's our namesake. And so instead of going in one direction and letting it kind of fall apart, let's reinvigorate it and let's completely, you know, we completely gutted that entire restaurant and completely redid it a couple of years ago. And there's always emotion involved.
Yeah.
For sure. People always ask, you know, what's your favorite restaurant? I mean, it's like saying, what's your favorite kid? You know, I mean, even if you think it, you can't say it. We're both pretty emotional about all the restaurants. There's some deep love with all this stuff, but you do have to look at it sometimes. With Landmark, it was like that child's game, which one of these things is not like the other. It stuck out, and we knew we had to change that one. That was not an emotional decision for us. We were like, we need to make this more of a chef-driven restaurant and change this one, even though it was still making money.
When you move to the moment where you're going to open a new restaurant,
mm-hmm.
or even it's conceptual when you're having the conversation before you get to the point where you're at with GT Prime, I mean, what has to be in place for Boca restaurants to invest in a new space? You know, is it a feeling to go, let's do another one? Is it a money flow kind of thing? What is it that is part of the decision making that gets you to say, let's open another restaurant?
It's buying into the talent that's going to be behind that restaurant first and foremost. You know, we've done three restaurants with Stephanie. She's immensely talented. Her restaurants are crazy busy. It's not even a consideration. You want to do another restaurant? Sure, let's do another restaurant. We like working together. The restaurants work. I think that if you're doing more than one place with a chef partner, I think we do look at it that you don't want to go too fast. You want a restaurant to be capitalized to a certain percentage before you look to do another
right.
restaurant. And also, do you have enough talent at the current restaurant that can stay there? We don't ever
right,
injure
yeah.
the existing restaurant to help the new restaurant. You know, you don't take the executive chef and all three sous chefs and the pastry chef over to the second restaurant. You know, you're just like, hey, this restaurant's working for a reason. So we might promote somebody to chef de cuisine that's already there, but we want to keep those restaurants intact, you know.
Is opening a restaurant a rush?
Huge rush. I think Rob and I have an addiction to it. It's this foxhole mentality. It's really hard. And you have, you know, 6 months of your life, you know, those 2 months before it opens, maybe 3 months, and then 4 or 5 months afterwards, that's really brutal. It's brutal physically. It's brutal mentally. But when you get on the other side and you've actually done something great and it resonates with the public and it resonates with critics and you love it, it's a pretty amazing feeling.
Chicago's a pretty competitive town when it comes to the culinary arts. We've
yes.
seen in the last couple of years a couple of restaurant groups, you included, really take on the mainstays. How competitive is Chicago when it comes to restaurants?
We always make a joke that we all kind of like sit around a table in a basement somewhere and, you know, Rich Melman's like, now listen, you guys, I've got River North. Fine, Boca Group, one off, you can have West Loop. It's actually pretty fraternal. We have an exceptionally good relationship with Let Us Entertain You. Kevin Brown and Rich Melman and RJ and Jared are friends and really great people. We see one off all the time. It's good. It's nice. I like dining. So I like being able to go into their restaurants and it be friendly and we can hug it out. It's competitive. It's friendly, but competitive. That's what I'll say.
Is that?
I'm not saying we're not all competitive against
right.
each other because I think
and
we
you
are.
I mean,
we definitely are. I think we'd all answer that the same way. You're not creating a new pie when you open up a restaurant. If the steakhouse pie is $200 million in Chicago, when we open up Swift & Sons, whatever we're doing out of that restaurant comes from somewhere. We're not creating
more,
X
right,
amount
right.
of million of new business.
It's from your experience, I mean, being in Florida and Nashville and
yes.
downstate, and knowing the other markets? Is it similar? I mean, because we'll have conversations with people in other industries, say theater or art or comedy, and they all talk about the community here in Chicago, that there is a place here that, that's different than, say, New York or L.A. when it comes to that specific discipline. Is it similar in restaurants?
It's different in different cities. People were mean to me in other cities.
They were.
Well, when I went to Springfield, Illinois, I was relatively young. And there were several restaurants where, you know, all the senators and lobbyists would go to. And I was this young kid. I was 26 at the time. And I opened up a restaurant and we were very busy. And all the other restaurateurs were not nice to me. It was very competitive and they were mean about it.
So that could happen. I mean, and you see that in other big cities as well. But Chicago, there's something different about the experience here in town?
I think there is. I think there is. I think at least we're friendly to each other's faces.
Let me ask you about Chicago. I mean, from the diner standpoint, what is it that exemplifies a Chicago consumer? You know, the city of Chicago has such a tremendous audience that's coming to these restaurants. It's fueling this audience. What makes them unique from other places that you've been?
Sure. So what you want in a perfect world is to be able to do something as narrow as it might be, and it's still to resonate with people. Like in Springfield, Illinois, my hometown, and God love them. I love Springfield, Illinois. But I couldn't do whatever I wanted there. I couldn't do foie gras torchon at Indigo Restaurant in Springfield, Illinois. It was not going to sell. In Chicago, all you have to do is worry about being great. That's it. Be great. Not that easy. But you can put whatever you want out there. You can, you know, stand behind your art and put it out there. And if it's great, you'll find a customer base. I don't care if you're in the weirdest neighborhood. That's what's unique about this town. The people know about food. They know about service. And they're good people. I live in Chicago for a reason. I choose people over climate. The weather in Chicago is like a door person at a hot nightclub. It keeps all the riffraff out. And so that's why I live here. And I like my customers.
I mean, you're a young guy. You have 14 restaurants under your belt.
Yeah.
You have made it at an early age, said, this is what I want to do. I want to be in restaurants.
Yes.
Is there a life beyond restaurants for you? I mean, do you see, as you start thinking about the next 20 years and say, you know what, this was a great ride, but I really like motorcycles. Like, can you see a future without restaurants?
I can't see a future without restaurants. I think a restaurateur is who I am. And I'm always going to be a part of it in some way. That's for sure. Are there other stuff I want to do? Absolutely. Do I want to write a book? For sure. Do I want to do a film? Absolutely. I love film. I made some really dumb short films over the years that you can find on YouTube if you really search. And I co-produced a film festival here in Chicago. So I think that's going to be a part of my life too. I like to travel. I've got a family and three kids that keep me busy. I got lots of stuff to do still, but restaurants are always going to be in there somewhere, I think.
Well, that's good to hear. Kevin Boehm is the co-founder of Boca Group, along with Rob Katz, the Boca Group, everything from Girl and the Goat to Swift and Sons, to the new restaurant GT Prime, which will be opening up this summer. Kevin Boehm, thanks for being my guest on the
Hey
Table.
Thank you for allowing me to come here and talk about my life.